Broadcasting live to New York, Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1200. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Radio Plus app and Bloomberg.com. This is Bloomberg Surveillance.
Good morning, 7:30 on Wall Street. I'm Michael McKee, along with Tom Keene. Not starting off very well. A lot of red on the screen today. We do have Citigroup reporting earnings at 8 a.m. this morning. That will get some attention. Goldman Sachs topping the top of news at Bloomberg today, embarking on its biggest cost-cutting push in years. Has to try to weather its slump in trading and deal-making. Goldman reports its earnings on Tuesday. Is forecast to report a steep drop in expenses for the quarter. Speaking of steep drops, Volkswagen's European first quarter market share reached a five-year low. Autobuyers snubbing the German carmaker's efforts to resolve that emissions cheating scandal. BATS Global Markets pricing its IPO, $19 a share. That's the top end of the marketed range. Puts a value on the company of $1.8 billion. And some good news from Bombardier for a change. Bombardier nearing an agreement to sell as many as 75 C-Series jetliners to Delta Airlines, that according to a person familiar with the talks. Now let's check in with Michael Barr at the latest world and national headlines. Michael?
Mike, thank you very much. Belgium's transport minister has resigned after a secret European Union report detailing lapses in airport security oversight was leaked in the wake of the deadly March 22nd bombings at Brussels Airport and subway. The confidential EU document from last year was made public by two Belgian opposition parties. It says the oversight of security measures at Belgium's airports was flawed and cited serious deficiencies in the way safety checks are managed. Boston is marking the third anniversary of the deadly 2013 marathon bombings with subdued remembrances. A wreath-laying ceremony will take place this morning at the marathon finish line at 2:49 p.m. Eastern Time. A citywide moment of silence will mark the time when the first of two pressure cooker bombs detonated. It didn't take long for Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton to clash as they met last night for a debate in Brooklyn. The candidates had pointed words for each other about the other's judgment and record. Clinton and Sanders have been clashing. According to Clinton, Sanders has not been able to fully answer questions about how he's carried out his proposals on the economy and foreign policy. Sanders criticized Clinton's votes in favor of the Iraq war and some trade deals while she was a senator. Global News, 24 hours a day, powered by our 2,400 journalists. I'm Michael Barr. Mike?
Thank you, Michael. Time now for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with John Stasha.
Mike, the Islanders haven't won a playoff series since 1993, a decade after winning the fourth consecutive Stanley Cup. They've lost seven series in a row. They're playing the Florida Panthers, who haven't won a series since 96. Game one in Miami, three times the Isles scored to tie the game. They took the lead in the third period. They won 5-4. John Tavares, a goal, two assists. They come right back tonight for game two. Rangers play game two at Pittsburgh tomorrow afternoon. They're hopeful Henrik Lundqvist can make a 112th consecutive playoff start and goal. He had to leave after the first period of the game one loss with an eye injury. Yankees managed just three hits off Marcus Stroman, lost to Toronto 4-2. Yanks come home with some puny batting averages. Brett Gardner is hitting 174, Chase Headley 150, and Alex Rodriguez is batting 120. They host Seattle tonight. Mets are in Cleveland. For the fourth time in 5 years, the Giants will open the season against the Cowboys. It'll be in Dallas. The Jets in week one, 9-11, will host Cincinnati. The season starts with a Super Bowl rematch, Carolina at Denver. For the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stasha.
Thank you, John. Interesting story today on the Bloomberg about the weather. Going to be 65, 70 degrees in New York. It is going to snow, speaking of the Broncos, in Colorado this weekend. This is Bloomberg Surveillance on Bloomberg Radio. I'm Michael McKee along with Tom Keene on Bloomberg Surveillance. We're looking at a down start to the day. S&P futures down by 4 points right now, 0.2%. Dow E-mini futures are off by 24, 0.1%. In Europe, the Stock 600 is 2 points lower. That's almost 0.5% on that index. Oil prices weighing on the markets. West Texas 40.58 is down 2.2%. Brent crude 42.85 down 2.3%. Iran says it won't send its oil minister to the big summit in Doha to try to come up with production caps. We'll see how that turns out. on Monday. Time now for the Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report, brought to you by New Jersey Institute of Technology, investing more than $110 million a year in applied research to solve problems and improve life. Learn more at storiesofinnovation.njit.edu. Here is John Tucker.
All right, Michael, Microsoft has sued the Justice Department to block authorities from taking customers' emails and other data stored by Microsoft without ever having to let them know. This is an escalation of a two-year tussle with the government over privacy and cloud computing. Well, today Apple is set to continue its fight to keep the government out of another iPhone. This one seized from a drug dealer in a Brooklyn case just weeks after the FBI dropped its efforts to force Apple to let it break into one used by a terrorist who killed his wife and 14 people last year in San Bernardino, who with his wife killed 14 people last year in San Bernardino, California. That earthquake in southern Japan that killed 9 people yesterday damaged buildings and derailed a bullet train. Also halted production at a Sony camera chip factory, a key part of the global smartphone supply chain. The plant on the southern island in Japan is still being inspected. The strength of the earthquake, as well as persistent aftershocks, are raising the risk it will take time to restore operations. That's according to an analyst at Mizuho Securities. And that is this morning's Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report. Michael.
Thank you very much, John Tucker. Well, we're 15 days into the second quarter, 14 and some hours. And as we note, stocks turned around in the first quarter tremendously. They've sort of been up and down in April so far. Today they are down. What's the overall outlook? Atul Lele is Chief Investment Officer of Deltek, and he's with us now. Atul, the Deltek outlook for the second quarter isn't all that bad, even though there's a lot of things, individual news stories that people are concerned about.
Yeah, look, that's a good point, Michael. I mean, what we're seeing right now is globally, you know, second derivatives move markets, and there's two things that are working for us. Number one, global growth momentum, that's growth in the rate of growth, the second derivative, is rising. All of the PMI new orders numbers across the world have been improving. Many are now consistent with an economic expansion. Secondly, global liquidity conditions, so just the amount of money supply that there is around the world, has increased rapidly as well on the back of ECB, Bank of Japan, PBOC, easing, and, of course, the Fed remaining on hold. So that combination of data that we're seeing from a global growth perspective and a global liquidity perspective is actually consistent with higher markets as we look back through time, and indeed that's our outlook for the future, despite some of these negative news flow stories that we're seeing.
Well, one thing that we haven't been able to break away from, it looks like, is a correlation between oil prices and equity prices. Oil lower again today, equity prices lower again today. Are we going to be able to break that at some point?
Oh, look, our view is that this combination of data is not only consistent with investment markets more generally moving higher, but also if we look specifically, and you spoke earlier about kind of specific news stories coming out, when we look at the oil story, it actually has turned around quite considerably since Q4 last year. Now, we upgraded our view of energy in the first quarter. With this second quarter outlook, we've upgraded our view of energy again. And that's really on the back of two things. Number one, global demand is increasing in response to that improvement in global growth that I spoke about earlier. But also, global supply conditions are improving as well. There's been a huge reduction in U.S. oil production. In fact, year on year, U.S. onshore oil production is actually negative in terms of negative growth. So the supply story is starting to look more favourable as well. So we believe actually markets are moving higher, but also oil prices are going to move higher over the balance of the year. They should end the year between $40 to $50 a barrel. We don't expect them to go lower back into the 20s as we saw in Q1.
The oil industry's earnings, which should start coming out in the next week or so, are forecast to be at almost historic lows, the drop from last year at this time. If prices are rising, do you want to get out ahead of that and buy some of these oil companies?
That's absolutely right. We are looking to accumulate energy companies over the next few weeks. You know, we're looking for areas of weakness. Obviously, they've had a strong run over the past few weeks. We will be looking to increase exposures towards the energy sector. That will primarily actually be through equities exposures because, to your point, and they've sold off quite heavily on the back of these historic earnings of the week, but the outlook, if oil prices do rise, will look a lot more favorable because, of course, they've put through a lot of cost cuts over the past quarter as well. So the operating leverage they'll get from higher prices will be significant.
Very quickly, are we talking big majors or what would you buy?
We're sticking towards the large integrated oil companies, those that have a yield, those that have healthy free cash flows. This isn't the time when exploration spend gets turned back on, so the smaller players are unlikely to benefit at this point. Likewise, the CapEx and maintenance players in the oil services space aren't going to benefit either, so very much towards the large end of the spectrum.
All right, let's come back with Atul Lele, Deltek, Chief Investment Officer, a relatively optimistic view of the markets going forward. Overall, investors aren't feeling optimistic on this Friday, even though the weather's supposed to be nice here in New York for a change. S&P futures are down by 4 points, 2/10. I heard this morning it's nice in London as well. If you're in London, you can let us know, but they were telling us the sun is shining. The stock 600 down 2 points, though, 0.5%. So,
are you saying there's a correlation between nice weather and stocks?
There's a good question. Is there a correlation? Okay. We'll find out. This is Bloomberg Surveillance on Bloomberg Radio Worldwide. And Bloomberg Surveillance is brought to you by your Tri-State BMW centers. Visit them online at tristatebmw.com. At BMW, they make only one thing, the ultimate driving machine.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. This update is brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit SectorSPDRS.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF. Oil is falling for a third day before major suppliers meet in Doha to discuss an output freeze, boosting bonds and sending European stocks lower, along with U.S. stock index futures. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P E-mini futures down 4.5 points, Dow E-mini futures down 28, and NASDAQ E-mini futures down 12. The DAX in Germany is down 0.6%. 10-year Treasury up 7/32, the yield 1.76%. Yield on the 2-year, 0.75%. NYMEX crude oil down 2% or 84 cents to $40.66 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.5% or $5.90 to $12.32.40 an ounce. The euro, $1.12.83, the yen, 108.84. Regions Financial's first quarter profit beating analyst estimates by 1 cent, and its shares are up 1.8% this morning. Emitel Networks agreeing to buy Polycom for cash and stock in a deal valued at about $1.96 billion to expand in the market for conferencing and video collaboration. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Tom and Mike.
Karen Moscow, thank you very much. We're talking with Atul Lele. He's Chief Investment Officer at Deltek. And we were talking about oil prices before the break. Let's pick up with that idea and ask if oil prices, you think, have bottomed and are going to go up in the next couple of months. Is that true for commodities in general? We saw the Chinese report economic growth today that matched their forecasts. You know, is this whole idea that global demand is falling apart over with now, and we'll see some stabilization?
Okay, that's a good question because the outlook for commodities is not just shaped by demand conditions. It's also shaped by U.S. dollar liquidity conditions. That is the amount of U.S. dollar money supply globally. Why? Because the U.S. dollar money supply is effectively the funding source for a lot of carry trades around the world, including commodities. Now, we still believe that we're in a secular bear market for commodities. We firmly believe that the last commodities boom is over. It ended in 2012, and the next commodities boom is a generation away. Within that, you can have cycles or mini cycles where you do get rallies, and those rallies are born out of two things. One is an improving global demand situation, and really we're talking about Chinese demand because that's the major contributor to commodities consumption. That is improving over the next few months, so that will be supportive. As well as that, U.S. dollar liquidity conditions are supportive because the Fed has effectively gone on hold for at least the next quarter. Mm-hmm. So that sets us up for a pretty favorable environment for carry trade assets. But as we move towards the back end of this year, we believe the Fed is going to have to tighten and more aggressively because they've been on hold right now. And when that U.S. dollar liquidity gets withdrawn from markets, that's going to be very, very painful for all carry trade-sensitive assets, including commodities.
So the great debate, maybe more of a debate earlier this week and in the last week, is how strong can the euro go? We've seen an impossibility of that to a few courageous calling for strong euro. I'm not going to say it's consensus now, but there's been a migration to 115, 120. Where are you on that?
Look, we think, you know, the euro in the near term can move up, but that's really, you know, when we're looking at against the US dollar, where we think the US dollar can experience 1 to 2 quarters of weakness. But, you know, we're secular bulls on the US dollar on the back of not only Fed policy, but also some changes within the US economy in terms of the US trade deficit not expanding as much, which will actually reduce US dollar's liquidity around the world. So the forces around the euro, US dollar are more borne by the US dollar. When we look at the euro against other currencies, look, we think European economic growth is moving from recovery to expansion. Monetary policy is going to remain where it is for the next year. So over the next year, look, we think that the euro can come down slightly. We're certainly not looking at it going towards parity, but I'd be very surprised to see it move up much stronger towards 120 just in this environment where the U.S. is so strong.
Well, you suggested that Europe may be okay if the euro doesn't weaken significantly. Can they get off the mark here? Can the economy grow enough to really make earnings significant change in earnings makes things worth buying?
Look, Europe can grow without a weaker euro, but the real issue is what parts of the economy are going to grow. Because if we don't see a weaker euro, then you're really going to see Germany's industrial production numbers not really experience that much strength, because they do rely on a lower euro to get a lot of that strength through. So it's going to be more of a consumption-led recovery, more of a housing and asset price-led recovery, rather than a manufacturing-led recovery if we don't get a weaker euro.
Achille, I look at the dynamics now, and of course we've done a lot on international economics this week and just having on Charles Dumas as well. As we mentioned to Ken Rogoff earlier this morning, it all comes back to the real economy. As an investor, how critical is it that I have a recovering world economy or a U.S. economy, or can I just have all this other mumbo-jumbo support asset prices?
It's incredibly important to have a recovering global economy. Because you can only get PE expansion for markets. You can only get PE expansion for so long. And that PE expansion is really driven by the discount rate declining, and the discount rate declining can only be driven by reference rates declining and spreads contracting. We've kind of reached the end of that, because reference rates are quite low. They're negative in many regions across the world, and spreads have come all the way in. So we're at the end of the PE expansion story. We need to start to get earnings recovering, and that can only come through stronger economic growth at this real economy level, not an asset price level.
Well, the differentiation going into the World Bank IMF meetings this weekend seems to be that the U.S. is doing what you say. The rest of the world is not. Is that impression wrong?
Yeah, look, we think the IMF's behind the curve on this, because as we look at these manufacturing surveys around the world, in almost every region we're seeing PMIs expand in terms of increase, and in almost every region we're now seeing PMIs above 50, which is typically associated with expansion. So to say that it's a US-led recovery is true. To say that it's a US-only recovery, we think, is false. There are other parts of the world that are just starting to carry their weight as well.
Where are you on this difference between European and U.S. banks? I mean, you're sort of removed from it. I get that, which I think is an advantage. You're not really wedded to a Wall Street or a Frankfurt view or a Brussels view. Can the European banks catch up, or is their day done?
Well, the issue that we face with the European banks is they haven't yet had the clean-out. There's a great deleveraging that's been working its way across the world. It hit the U.S. in 2008, as we know, hit Europe in 2012, and as we pointed out, in 2015 it was to hit emerging markets. Indeed, that occurred, and next it's actually going to hit commodity economies. The problem is that European banks are very heavily exposed to this current phase of deleveraging. They've got past the European issues, and non-performing loans in commercial banks for Europe are declining, but they're exposed to emerging market deleveraging, and that's where the real issues are with European banks, and that's the big difference between European banks and U.S. banks. You know, non-performing loans is the single biggest factor to impact bank earnings, and Europe has got past the European problems but not the emerging market problems, and that's where we still face issues with European banks.
Mike, I would point out that Deutsche Bank actually had a pretty good week. They had a good early week off the J.P. Morgan enthusiasm.
Well, they'll take what they can get.
Exactly.
Are you buying financials, Atul?
So we are long U.S. regional banks, and that's on the back of, number one, a very favorable non-performing loan environment, and non-performing loans are very low, expected to remain low with a recovering economy, as well as that top-line growth in terms of credit growth is recovering as well. We're very bullish on U.S. housing. We're bullish on the broader economy. So regional banks within the U.S. are where we're exposed, those who don't have energy exposure within their books. In terms of European banks, we were exposed last year in the early part of the year. We removed our exposure just as these emerging market problems started building. And as you know, we've been quite bearish on emerging markets for some time. And so we'll be staying out of Europe, at least for the near term, until we see some dissipation in those issues.
Now, we tend to talk about the straightforward investments on this show, but I'm just curious, given what Deltek does, if there are alternative investments out there that are attractive at this point, or do you not have to do that if you can get what you're looking for in traditional asset classes?
Oh, look, as Deltek manages money, we look across all asset classes, and that's both listed and unlisted. We do see favorable opportunities in the unlisted market right now. And that's really born out of the idea that you can really get a good yield in the unlisted market. There's a lot of private companies out there who still don't have access to debt markets because of the financial crisis. They're paying quite healthy yields. And, of course, that's quite attractive in a relative sense in a world where the whole listed market has yields which are low or negative. So we do look at unlisted investments. We are looking at yielding unlisted investments right now in that alternative space.
Atul Lele is the Chief Investment Officer at Deltek. Thanks for joining us this morning here on Bloomberg Surveillance. He has an optimistic view of where things are going and thinks oil prices will be rising, helping put a floor under equities. That's not happening today. West Texas is down 2.2%, as is Brent crude, and that's weighing on stocks. Futures off by 5 points. S&P futures off by 5 points, a 0.2 drop. In Europe, it's a 2-point drop for the Stock 600. That's 0.5% as we get ready for the big Doha oil producers meeting this weekend. Will they come to some sort of agreement? Stay tuned. Monday morning, we'll be talking all about it. Coming up here on Bloomberg Surveillance, we're going to be talking about Citigroup earnings. Citigroup is reporting in just a few moments. Allison Williams will be here to help us break it all down. Citi shares right now up 0.3% in anticipation, perhaps, of better than forecast news. We'll see here on Bloomberg.